Keywords, Volume 2, by Chan Master Sheng Yan. The Spirit of Chan, from Chan Newsletter, Number 104, November, 1994, Seton Hall University, November 17th, 1989. The Caucasian monk Bodhidharma brought his version of Buddhism to China more than 1,000 years after the Buddha's death. But aside from legends and stories, history says little about the Indian origins of Chinese Chan. The most famous story tells of the Buddha who stood before a large assembly of monks, holding up a flower, but otherwise remaining silent. None of the monks understood this gesture except Mahakasyapa, a senior disciple, who simply smiled at the Buddha. Seeing this, the Buddha said, "I have the true Dharma eye, the marvelous mind of Nirvana, the true form of the formless, the subtle Dharma gate that does not rely on words or letters. It is a special transmission outside the scriptures. This I entrust to Mahakasyapa." In Chan tradition, this special transmission outside the scriptures marked the beginning of master-to-disciple transmission that continues to this day. Two other stories also illustrate the spirit of Chan present in early Indian Buddhism. The first concerns Ananda, a favorite disciple of the Buddha, who had committed to memory all the Buddha's teachings. Despite this, he never attained enlightenment during the Buddha's lifetime. After Buddha's death, Mahakasyapa gathered an assembly of enlightened disciples to collect and memorize the Buddha's teachings. Mahakasyapa refused to invite Ananda on the grounds that Ananda was not enlightened. Ananda begged Mahakasyapa to admit him to the assembly, saying, "Lord Buddha has entered Nirvana. Now only you can help me reach enlightenment." Mahakasyapa finally said, "I cannot help you. Only you can help yourself." Finally realizing he had only himself to rely on, Ananda went on solitary retreat, where he dropped all his attachments and attained enlightenment. Another disciple of the Buddha was named Suddhipanthaka, or Small Path, who was dull-witted. Among the Buddha's disciples, Small Path was the only one who could not remember the Buddha's teachings. He was given the job of groundskeeper, since he didn't seem fit to do anything else. After doing this for many years, one day Small Path asked, "The ground is clean, but is my mind ground as pure?" At that moment, all delusions dropped from his mind. The Buddha was pleased at this and affirmed that Small Path had become an enlightened arhat. The Ananda story illustrates that knowledge and intelligence do not necessarily guarantee enlightenment, while the Small Path story shows that even a dull person can attain sudden enlightenment. Chan has less to do with great learning than with freeing the mind from its attachments. This does not mean that Chan bars intelligent people from enlightenment, or that it encourages stupidity. Shakyamuni Buddha, Mahakasyapa, and Shariputra were people of great learning. Rather, Chan has to do with freeing the mind of its attachments. According to Chan history, the Indian lineage shows 28 generations of transmission from Mahakasyapa to Bodhidharma. It is unlikely that there was only a single line of transmission from the time of Shakyamuni to Bodhidharma going to China. In the Chinese Chan lineage, it is also believed that from Bodhidharma to Huineng, only 5 people received transmission, but the records indicate that Bodhidharma had several enlightened disciples, as did the second and third patriarchs. It appears that belief in single-person linear transmission stems from the fact that we only recognize the patriarchs as having received the direct transmission. Indeed, some of Huineng's disciples established their own lineages, but only 2 survive today, the Lin Ji and the Cao Dong. I am the 62nd lineage holder of Chan from Huineng, and the 57th generation in the Lin Ji tradition. In the Cao Dong lineage, I am the 50th generation descendant of the co-founder, Master Dong Shan. All the masters before me in this lineage had more than one disciple, but when one traces back one's lineage, it makes it seem that there were no other disciples. We should turn to a description of the main styles that characterize Chan practice. The fifth patriarch, Hongren had two prominent disciples, Shen Xiu and Hui Neng. The Shen Xiu style was based on gradual but diligent practice. Shen Xiu used the analogy of keeping the mirror mind free from the dust of vexation through the practice of virtue. We can examine and rectify our behavior until the self nature, mirror, is clean. This process continues until purity of mind is achieved. Hui Neng saw Shen Xiu's view as attributing form and characteristics to the mind. Taking a different stance, Hui Neng emphasized, giving rise to mind while not abiding in forms. In other words, there really is no mirror mind to keep free of dust. Self-nature is originally pure. In fact, it is that of a Buddha, so there is nothing to take away and nothing to add. There's a Chan saying, as long as there is nothing in your mind, any direction, north, east, south, or west, is fine. Each lineage has its own rules, style, and method of practice, but the goal is the same, a mind free from attachments. There are no definitive standards in Chan, so as long as your mind is at peace. If Chan cultivation is to bear fruit, you must understand the four components that shape the entrance through practice, as taught by Bodhidharma. Accept the law of cause and effect, or karma. Difficulties in this life are the result of past deeds. The consequences of causes we have laid down in the past should cause us no sadness or anger today. Accord with conditions. Good fortune and pleasant circumstances are due to meritorious deeds in past lives. When the causes and conditions dissipate, the favorable events will also end. Therefore, do not be overly happy or proud when faced with favorable conditions. Practice without seeking. Seeking inevitably results in suffering. Do not seek, and you will depart from self-centeredness and gain complete freedom of mind. Practice in accordance with Dharma. Realize that the self and all phenomena are inherently empty and pure. This practice is the highest of the four and includes the three mentioned above. It is the practice of directly contemplating emptiness, whereby we help others without clinging to notions of self. We recognize the emptiness of dharmas without rejecting their manifold appearances. Even though our minds are free of attachments, we still work diligently at whatever needs to be done. Before we begin practice, enlightenment may be our motivation, but once on the path, we drop attachment to the idea of enlightenment. The Platform Sutra of Hui Neng emphasized a stageless practice in which, regardless of time and place, the mind makes no distinction between virtue and evil, good and bad, right and wrong. It is thus utterly free from discrimination. This in itself is practice. The mind usually referred to in the Platform Sutra is pure mind or no thought, the equivalent of enlightenment. No thought means that one does not attach to or abide in thoughts. Thoughts and memories do occur, but one does not give rise to other thoughts attached to them. The Platform Sutra begins with no thought, and the result is no form. No form is the phenomenal aspect of no thought, in which all dharmas are without characteristics. That is to say, are empty. No form is one and the same with pure mind and thought, the same as wisdom enlightenment. Thus, in Hui Neng's approach, with no method other than to maintain a mind totally free of discrimination, enlightenment can be attained. The aim of Chan is to lessen vexation and open the gate of wisdom. This can be approached through daily and periodic practice. Without regular daily meditation, it would be difficult to reduce vexation and cut off attachments. Your mind will not be peaceful. When not meditating, deal with people and situations with a concentrated, content, humble, and grateful mind. I tell my students to pay attention wherever they are and focus on whatever they are doing at the moment. Live in the present. This too is daily practice. Meditation and daily life are not separate. They go hand in hand. However, daily practice is not enough. You need periodic, intensive practice as well. Every so often, you should set aside an extended, fixed period of time for the sole purpose of practice. whether alone or in a retreat context. The benefit of group practice is that practitioners help each other. It is also safer to practice within the group. If you only practice daily without periodic, intensive practice, your practice may be weak. Going on retreat is the best way to strengthen your practice.